If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
This episode sponsored by The Bomb Box. When someone you love is going through cancer, you want to do more than send flowers. You want to truly help. That's why there's The Bomb Box. Founded by 6-time cancer survivor Liz Bendit, The Bomb Box creates thoughtfully curated care packages filled with premium, practical tools designed specifically for surgery, chemo, and recovery. Every item is chosen based on insights from more than 500 patients and caregivers, because during treatment, the smallest comforts can make the biggest difference. Don't just send a gift, send real support. Visit thebombbox.com today and get free shipping on orders over $50. That's thebombbox.com.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. I want to thank you, listeners, for making us number one in the United States in the entertainment news category, and also number one in Canada, number 7 in Australia. And I can't even go on. There's over 11 different countries where we've placed in the top 50, most of them in the top 10. So I really, really want to thank you and tell you how much I appreciate you, listeners. Please do me a favor and go in and leave a review on Apple and give us 5 stars. It helps with the algorithm. It helps people know what our program is if they're just finding us for the first time. And we read every comment and it means so much. So again, thank you for making us number one in the country. Well, today we are honored to have a very special guest, Ari Zucker. Ari is an acclaimed American actress and model, best known for her long-running role as Nicole Walker on the NBC daytime soap opera Days of Our Lives, a part she has embodied since 1998. But if you're not somebody that watches daytime TV, you may know her name from a different incident. In October of 2016, Ari found herself thrust into the national spotlight due to the infamous Access Hollywood tape featuring Donald Trump and Billy Bush. This is the incident where Trump and Billy Bush were on a bus and Trump said, "I better use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her." That person that was her was Ari Zucker. So most recently, she filed a lawsuit about a year ago in 2023 against Corday Productions, the production studio that does Days of Our Lives, and Albert Alar, someone she works with, alleging sexual harassment. This lawsuit then led to salary reduction and then her contract and the show not being renewed. She's in the middle of a legal battle right now, but she did come on our show to talk all about it and to talk about standing up for yourself when you really believe that you are not being treated well. In our conversation, Ari opens up about how these experiences shaped her resilience and determination. She also shares the inspiring journey of starting a new chapter with her husband, Sean Christian, who she met on set, through their company, Aloha Life, as certified purpose and creative mindset life coaches. So join us today as we delve into Ari's remarkable career, sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with the talented Ari Zucker. We'll be right back. Ari, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm so excited that you're here. We've all seen you in the news in the last, you know, couple months. But before we get into that, I just want to talk about the fact that you have been in the entertainment industry for most of your adult life. Can you just talk about how you kind of got into it? You started as a model. You're gorgeous. Like, tell us how you got into it.
I was roller skating on Venice Beach in Los Angeles. And that was a time when, to age myself here, that was a time when they still had scouts for agencies. And so I think I fell. And then a modeling scout saw me and said, hey, we'd really love to, you know, have you come into our agency and see if you're interested in modeling. Mm. So I think I was 16. And this was the last thing I wanted to do. I wanted to be a veterinarian, and you know, probably see the doggies behind me. But that was my goal. I rode horses. I've been riding horses since I was 3 years old, pony rides and all. And so I did get into the industry and found, obviously, make really great money. Mm-hmm. And I was scheduling things around it. And then when I was getting serious about going to vet school, I happened to get an audition for a few soaps, and Days of Our Lives being one of them. I think I was 21 or something like that. And they needed a model. And I ended up getting the job, which I couldn't believe because I was not a great actress at the time. And I ended up getting it. And they were still doing those really big auditions, like nationwide and big cities auditioning mm-hmm. for these characters. So I really couldn't believe that I got it. So I dropped everything that I was doing because my brother gave me great advice that school's not going anywhere. You should take this, save your money, and then you can always go back to school. So long story short, I stayed on the show, you know, my whole life. I went to acting school for 13 years until my daughter was born, stayed in class. Just it's not easy staying on a soap opera because you really have to get the fans on your side. You really have to, you know, create a big fan base. And I think that was my goal. I always asked for advice. I always asked for help because I didn't really know what I was doing. And such wonderful women and stage managers helping me out to say, this is the things that you need to do and what you need to work on to, you know, create longevity on the show. And so that's what I did, and been on the show ever since then. I took two breaks, one in 2008 and then one in 2017 or 18. I can't remember exactly. It's 2018, I think. Two short breaks. But other than that, this character, and I am proud of myself. I have to say my character actually doesn't have any strong bloodlines. You know, there's the Damaras and the Hortons and the Kiriakises. And I'm married into those families, but my character is kind of a lone wolf. So I'm proud of that work that I created with the fans and that the fans have appreciated this character so much.
I'm curious how it's changed from when you first started and then the arc of the character all the way until, you know, recently. Was it a little part back then? And then they started to see that you could really develop this character and they started writing different scenarios. Like, how does that work in daytime television? Is it always changing? Are you always wondering how the character's lifespan is going to go?
Yeah, there's always a question about your lifespan. I never assumed that I was going to get a pickup. Mm. And I think that it saved me a little bit because as an actor, you know, you're really driving yourself to, you know, consistently want to work, and it can also be a detriment to your auditions. So, and some people are really great at auditioning and then not great in front of the, you know, camera and creating story, or vice versa. Like, I am terrible at auditioning, but you give me the meat of the job and I'm really good at it.
Yeah.
And so, so when I started this job, my character was supposed to be a love interest for Jensen Ackles' character on the show, which is Eric Brady, when he was originally on the show. So that love story started, and then this immediate fight between Ali Sweeney's character, Sammy Brady, and mine started. And it was really fun the way they wrote these two characters and the fighting. And we actually created, as years went on, we created our own name, which became Soul, which was Sammy and Nicole, S-O-L-E. And I think we just created this wonderful base who just loved watching these two characters fight. So not only did we create, you know, I created a love interest with Jensen's character, Eric, which is now played by Greg Vaughn. I was able to do that with female characters as well. And if there was any ever advice I'd give to actors is make sure you have chemistry with everybody. It's not necessarily sexual chemistry that you're looking for. It doesn't matter what kind of friendship or what kind of chemistry you're creating. It's just find something about the other character so you can create longevity and wherever you're working as an actor.
Right. I just want to establish for people like how much this consumed your life, this role, working with these people. How often were you shooting, filming, and then the arc of literally how long you've been with these people and the crew and all that?
So let's see, I'll pick one to start with. So as far as how often we worked, there was a time when we worked really long hours. We're in at 6 o'clock, sometimes not leaving till midnight, depending on how, what the structure was, which executive producer was in. At one time they would rehearse all morning long until lunch, and then they would record in the afternoon. I just missed that era. So we would do our dry blocking in the morning and our scenes right after. We'd start at 8:45 in the morning, taping. Mm-hmm. And then just keep taping throughout. Now, this is when we had more budget. Our budget was a lot larger. Streaming really killed a lot of TV shows as far as their budgets. So at a time when it was just network, that's all people were really watching, and cable.
Yeah.
And so we were able to shoot longer hours, take much more time with our scenes. And we, you know, and like I said, you're working sometimes a 14, 16 hour day. As time went on, we had to tighten the schedules. And just to show you, you know, in between, just from the beginning, the 14 to 16 hour day, now I could be in at 6 a.m. and out at 9 a.m. I mean, that's how quick, and the machine is very well oiled, right? And so now they want you one rehearsal, one take. So you're learning a ton of lines, and you're working really, really fast, and you're in and you're out. So people that come in, even film stars we've had come in, go, how do you do this? And your brain, it's like a muscle. It's like a weight. So, and then I'll take a step back now with the crew and how long I've, you know, been working with a lot of the crew members. I grew up my adult life with a lot of these crew members that are coming to my wedding.
Wow.
So we've been working together for many, many years. Some maybe 10 years, some 14, some 8, but that's still a long time on a television show to create those relationships with people. So they're tight. I was always the kind of person that if I always felt there was always this hierarchy, I think people would put in, oh, you're an actor, so you're this level, you're the A group. And then there's the crews, the B group. And then there's the night crews, the C group. And I don't like putting people in that kind of bubble. Like, we're all here to create a show. We're all here to do the same thing, and none of us can do any of this without each other. So I always felt when I walked into that show, as I got older and really appreciated where I was, I thought, how do I want to treat people? How would I want to treat, if I were the boss, how would I want to treat people when I walked into the studio? And that's how I would do it. So I became a mentor, a friend, a mom, a liaison for things. And that's just how I built my career there. So I wasn't just an actor.
Yeah.
I did so much more there because I felt I had people giving back to me when I walked on that show and was a baby. I consistently wanted to do the same for others.
Right. Can you talk about like one of your happiest memories? I mean, I know you met your first husband on set, right?
Yeah. And my fiance.
Yeah, and your fiance. So like you obviously connected with some people there.
Yeah, my dating pool is small.
Right. Well, you're there so many hours. I would guess, you know, that's how it happens.
It was my second home.
Yeah.
It was my second home. I did a lot there. I think a lot of some of my favorite memories, of course, on camera. I will say my favorite on camera memory working with John Aniston. Those scenes and these two characters were supposed to be a May December romance, and it turned out to be more of a comedy relationship. And one of my favorite times with him, and John Aniston is just a clever, clever man. And he had such a dry sense of humor and told wonderful, wonderful jokes. But there was a scene where he's locking my character up. He won't let us get divorced. And I'm trying to climb out my window and he catches me. And instead of pulling me in, he pushes me out. And it was something we worked out together. And it was so funny because nobody expected him to push me out the window. And, you know, that was a time we had a little more time to kind of play and have fun with our scenes. I think those were my favorite times on the show, but also off camera. My fiance and I held a lot of parties after hiatuses or going into the holidays. We did the Christmas party for about 10 years, and we started doing them a little bit at the studio when we were allowed to, and then we would move them off campus to restaurants, and then eventually doing them at our house. And I just felt that, you know, you have 60 to 80 people coming to your home. That says a lot about you, that they want to be there. I would have, you know, a bouncy house out in the front and silly little things for everybody just to really, really enjoy time off and just have a good time and be together and know each other on a different level than just work.
Right.
So those would be my two favorite, you know, those my storyline story and then just sort of just human story of a good time.
I'm curious about the logistics, like how far in advance are they giving you your lines? I remember in the old days, didn't they have, my mom used to be on a soap opera before I was born. She said that they used like cue cards, like they didn't even really get their sides or whatever. Maybe they got them in the morning, but like she said, they would hold up stuff. So are you getting it weeks in advance? Are you finding out if you're like having an affair with someone new that day? Like, how does it work? You're getting locked in a closet, whatever.
There. So we would naturally get a script about a week ahead of time.
Okay.
And in the past, maybe we would get it a little sooner. The story about the cue cards, I could never work with the cue cards. I still worked with actors that and actresses that did use them when I first started. And I thought that is so distracting because like, so, you know, as I'm looking right into camera, your cue cards right here. So you're kind of like, you have to get really good at it. So when you had tally lights on, so if your tally light was off, you could look over at whatever your next line is going to be. Mm-hmm. And I thought, to me, no offense to anybody who liked cue cards, it is such a disconnect between you and the character. So how are you going to really, truly create a relationship with someone if you're constantly looking off like this? So mm-hmm. I found them distracting. I never used them. I thought if you don't know your lines, you can't play. Mm. But that's me. And that's just a method that I taught myself. So everyone always thought, God, you learn your lines so well. I'll walk up on dry block, just rehearsal without my script.
Yeah.
And the director tells you where you're going and I can really absorb what I'm doing. And then I would go up on set when I wasn't filming and I would walk through my dry block and really get to know what I was doing. So it was really, really professional at my job for sure. So those are things that you just kind of decide how you want to work as an actor.
Yeah, right. There's a big turnover in executives on soap operas, always new EPs, writers. When did you start to see a change in the environment on days?
Well, pardon me. I think there was always something you'd see on the show. Mm-hmm. You know, look, it's the soap opera started in the 80s. And I think behavior is something you either get used to and you just kind of move on. Or you could speak up about it or you could not. You could report it or you could not. And I think a lot of us just like, let's just go through with our day. Mm-hmm. So sorry.
No, take it back.
But, you know, as a young person on the show, you just want to keep your job. And the entertainment industry is full of inappropriate things. Mm-hmm. And like I said,
which almost seems normalized at the time, especially at the beginning, I think.
Absolutely. And there are things that I do feel like I think in life you should have a thicker skin. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll tell you, modeling overseas, there it's worse than anything, you know, that you see here. I mean, I have other stories, you know, when I was being interviewed during the Trump situation with the Access Hollywood tapes, I'm like, why don't you report about the things that really matter, you know, mm-hmm. about what happened to women that are not protected in that industry? But that's a whole other story. That's a whole other podcast. Right. But so I would see things, here and just move on, you know, and a lot of the times, you know, I learn how to handle myself in a situation. So I never felt it directly early on. But as I got older and as I got to know people on the show or hear stories about things that happened on the show, I just went, how can I support? How can I be there? How can we work through this together? And what have you done to help yourself? Because really at the end of the day, it is the person's responsibility to help themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, so when you see these things happen, you hope that the right person that you're telling the situation to does something about it.
Right. So were there, so you're saying there were conversations in the background for a long time about, oh, this is happening to me, is that happening to you, kind of letting it go, but everyone was a little bit aware that it wasn't just them.
Yes, absolutely. There's always a story. There's stories that go way back.
Yeah.
But, and again, it's an era thing, right? Mm-hmm. These things happen. Is anybody going to listen to me? Because a lot of things for women at that, in that time, you weren't heard.
Right.
Sometimes
you
were
seen as difficult and a pain in the ass and, you know, trouble.
Yeah, right. Great. She's, you know, creating nuisance. So, you know, there's, you know, and you want to protect people to a certain degree. And I think that's really important to do because, again, if it doesn't really have a lot to do with you, you know, you have to be careful. Yeah, I even right now have to be careful about what I say and what I share because I'm in the middle of something right now.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
and I also think it's interesting because, I mean, I think we've all been in situations, yours especially though, where you want to be liked. I mean, your job is about keeping your job and you don't want to create problems where you want to be liked even by the person that's giving you a hard time. So right. Sometimes you do choose to go along with it much longer because in essence, they're making you feel like they like you and you're, you know, and if you screw that up, it could be detrimental. I mean, I think it's understandable. When did the behavior by Mr. Alar progress to the point that you felt that you had to finally say something?
Well, I think that as I heard these stories continue on, it was a time when I just went, okay, enough is enough. Enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I just, and that was last year in March when I just, you know, it's really, it affected me more hearing other people's stories. And I thought just as a mama bear, a mother, a friend, I just went, nobody's saying anything or doing anything. And that's the reason I stood up. That's the reason I said, okay, I'm trying to help. I'm trying to create a situation. It wasn't me going, you know, this is all about me. I've never been that way. I've been nothing but loyal. I've been nothing but kind. I've been nothing but good. And I have tons of people to back that up about, you know, supporting those who really have been in not such great situations. And so that's what I was trying to do for the whole show in its entirety. Say, I'm just trying to relay something to you that's going on that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
And while it was being addressed, the Deadline article comes out about, you know, this inappropriate behavior. There are 30 people that came forward. It's not, so I'm getting targeted because I'm the one that said something, but there are so many people who thankfully, you know, had said something to create the change that needed to happen. You know, if I convinced 30 people to do that, wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Can you talk about the process though, of what you had to go through to get someone to actually listen at the beginning to get him removed from the show? Like talk about how hard that was.
This episode sponsored by the BombBox. When someone you love is going through cancer, you want to do more than send flowers. You want to truly help. That's why there's the BombBox. Founded by 6-time cancer survivor Liz Bendit, the BombBox creates thoughtfully curated care packages filled with premium, practical tools designed specifically for surgery, chemo, and recovery. Every item is chosen based on insights from more than 500 patients and caregivers, because during treatment, the smallest comforts can make the biggest difference. don't just send a gift, send real support. Visit thebalmbox.com today and get free shipping on orders over $50. That's thebalmbox.com.
So just by the steps and a legal sense, because I did everything, you know, by the book, right? Just what matters most are facts.
Okay.
Facts, facts, facts. It's not my emotion. It's not anybody's emotions. It's the facts. And so that is the most important thing as any woman that I would share, any person that is going through a situation like this. If you are not presenting that, and if you are not, you know, creating a situation for yourself to make sure that that is happening, then that's when things go awry. But I knew that what the steps that I was taking were right, because, you know, I have a fantastic civil rights attorney. And, you know, I did everything by the book. So that process for me, it's slow going as it is, it needed to be said. It needed to be walked through. The investigation happened. Again, I'm not saying anything that isn't out there online, right? So, you know, the Sony started an investigation, and then the powers that be decide what they're going to do. And I mean, I have notes from, and people can go back and read these. You have, you know, actors that came forward to Deadline and said certain things and went, well, how is this, you know, okay? Because it's the fact that one person comes out, I can see people going, or corporations saying, you know, it's only one person that came out, but 25 to 30 people, you know, you probably should do something.
Right.
It's just my guess.
And had you tried to have a conversation at the very beginning with him directly, with Mr. Allar, and say, can you stop? I mean, and okay, we'll answer that first, and then I'll get to my next question.
Well, I think the idea was to go to, you know, the people above
him. But you had no HR department, right? I mean, how did you even know who to involve?
We have no HR department, and still to this day do not have an HR. Well, maybe not. I've been off I've been off campus for 6 months, so I don't know. Maybe they do have someone there now. I don't know. But it's an issue. And in, again, if anyone were to look, because the lawsuit is public record, you can go and look and see what, you know, what we're filing against. But the fact that there's the protection is to protect everybody on the show. So if you don't have an HR department, and when they say, oh, well, why don't you go to your executive producer? Well, how could I go to my executive producer when he's the one that's doing things?
Right.
You know, so that's a problem. And so there, you know, part of the problem was Sony is in Century City. So we're in, not in remotely near each other for someone to go, I need to go to a department where I can at least feel like I can be trusted, or they can be trusted with my situation.
Right.
And again, these are all facts. This is just by the book. This is just common knowledge. Somebody who feels, and not just me, it's all the other people that came forward, and you say, look, I didn't feel safe and nothing was done. And now that part of the issue is people didn't want to lose their jobs.
Right.
So they had to brush it under the rug. And that's, you know, there's 120 employees at Days of Our Lives. And I can imagine a lot of them need these jobs, just like anybody else in any other position, whether you're working at CVS or you're working at a studio, you want to feel safe in your environment. And you want to feel like you could speak up, and you want to feel like, look, there should be some rules. If you work at a place, you should know that you're working into whatever system they have. It should be a fair, balanced place.
So, and I'm curious, when you decided to move forward and have these conversations, were people that knew what was going on, were they supporting you, or were they like, oh God, Ari, don't do that. This is going to create a huge problem.
There were both sides. Were both sides, because, and logically, I had to think about this. I didn't just run and jump and go, you know, I'm going to cause this whole issue. I mean, I had spoke up a year prior to this.
Yeah.
So
it's like you want to tell the truth, but the retaliation could be even worse at the end of the day.
Right. I could lose my job.
Yeah.
So I understood what the consequences were to do the right thing. And I'll continue to say women and or people, because there were a lot of men who felt violated as well, have got to stand up for yourself. And even the viewers, I mean, there's an I Stand with Ari happening right now, and that's building, where it's the viewers are even feel insulted. And I'm like, well, stand up and speak up for yourself. There's nothing wrong with that. If you feel this isn't right, you know, I think that people just assume that this is gonna, you know, get brushed under the rug as well, and that they can just keep doing what they're doing. And I think sure they can. Absolutely. Everybody has the right to do what they want to do. This is America. So, but under the circumstances, I too believe that I want to help coach people on how to do stand up for themselves, but in the right way. Right. You know, make sure you have the facts, make sure you have all the things there, because if it does roll into something like a lawsuit or something like that, you know that you have the facts backing you up. And that is the most important thing. It's not right. emotional, but it is the right thing to do. And so that's what I go on. I just continue. And my whole through line here is creating a safe, balanced, fair work environment. And that's how I started this. That's what I believe in. And that's what I will continue saying. And that's why I did what I did, because people did not feel safe.
Right. So just for people that haven't followed this story yet, can you just talk briefly about how this is, you know, kind of rolled out? So, and talk about how your contract ended and all that stuff.
Sure. You want to hear kind of like, so the misconduct, if you
will. Yeah. And then just how you are no longer, you know, with them.
Sure. Sure. So in March of 2023, several actresses on Days of Our Lives and a female PR department were dissolved at Days of Our Lives. And through conversations with my coworkers and co-stars, we all decided that enough was enough on the show, and it needed to be brought to our executive producer's attention, Ken Corday, that things were going on behind the scenes of the show and they needed to be addressed. So an investigation was started, and during that process, the executive producer that this was against was still working on the show, and many people were still uncomfortable that he was still working on the show. And that's when more people stood up. They came forward in a Deadline article and expressed, you know, for instance, an actress was blatantly kissed at an event unbeknownst to her, and she felt completely violated. Another male actor was yelled at in front of the whole crew. Again, this is all in the Deadline article. You can read it. I am not saying, I'm not, you know, making stuff up. He was yelled at, screamed in front of cast and crew. And according to sources close to the situation, the verbal attack happened after the actor got a hair trim, which he apologized for, even though he wasn't on contract at the time. So stories like this are things that, you know, started to come out. Mm-hmm. And during that process, I had been written off the show in June of 2023, my character, with no conversation. And what's interesting is I've always had a great relationship, have had conversations when, you know, you do renegotiate on a contract, the teams always get together and there's a verbal conversation. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any of that. But thanks to my amazing attorney, Anahita Sedigatvar, she probably made a shift in what was happening, and the character continued on through December. And then that's when things shifted. There was no conversation about my contract, and basically it ran its course and I'm just not on the show.
I'm just curious, like, it's so obvious that, you know, had you not said something, you would still be on the show, most likely. Doesn't it seem obvious to them? I mean, it just seems so crazy that they would be that blatant to retaliate in that way.
Yes. And I think the one thing I will express, because I will, I've always been so loyal to that show. I absolutely love Days of Our Lives. I love all the viewers that love Days of Our Lives. And I need to make that, you know, a really big point, because it's not the cast, it's not the crew, it's not even, you know, half the people that, the majority of people that work there are absolutely 1,000% incredible. Mm-hmm. And I love them so much. And I will always be there for them in anything that they need. Mm-hmm. It's hurtful. Mm-hmm. It's painful to have knowingly gone into this saying, hey, I'm trying to help here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do you a favor and just say, you know, this is right. This, we might want to fix this
and help be the voice for other people who may have not been confident enough to do it on their own.
But, you know, it didn't turn out that way. And again, I have to be careful about all the things that I say, because I want to make sure they're all proactive and positive, because that's the person I am. Mm. I just want to do what's right by, you know, look, Ken Corday was amazing. I've kept this job, you know, for 26 years. And then it's like I said this in my own podcast. It's like being with your husband for 26 years and all of a sudden he decides to communicate, slam the door behind him and just walk away. And you're like, you're not going to talk to me?
Right.
It's really a tough pill to swallow, but I did expect it.
Yeah. And you decided to do it anyways, which says a lot about absolutely what you're going through.
Absolutely. So, and I didn't know, I did have that feeling. And even one of my friend and coworker said, all right, you know, you're going to get fired. Right. So, I mean, that was just a comment, you know, that a friend made. And I said, yeah, but look at if the goal here is we want people to continue to work at Days of Our Lives. I know personal stories of coworkers, and I don't want them to lose their jobs. I want this show to keep going. That was the whole point of doing this. And I'm glad it is. It got picked up for 60 years. We're in year 58. It got picked up another two. I'm so happy for them. Would never change that.
I'm curious how they wrote you out. Did they kill you? Can you come back at any time if it all works
out? Well, I think they were smart enough not to kill me. No, okay. My last day is July. I think it's what it said on my last script was July 29th. I'm not sure if that got moved or anything, mm-hmm. but as far as I know, July 29th, 2024 is my last air date. I don't even know what day.
But these are things that you filmed a long time ago, 6 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. My last day at work was December 23rd, 2023.
Oh, got it. So the viewers don't even know how you're ending.
Right. Right. And okay. I'll leave that. I, you know, I have decorum. I will not say how I leave the show, but that, you know, I do respect that, you know, we don't want to share that. We want the fans to be excited and enticed. And also, like I said, I've got, you know, a great group of women who are really standing up for saying it's not okay how you treat people there. And I love it. And it's really great that, you know, because what's interesting is when I have talked to the fans, I've done fan events recently, and how wonderful they are about sharing their personal stories, their personal trauma, or how something like this happened to them at their place of work. And the fact that I can help them just to say, you know, what they're feeling, so that somewhere in their life, they're healing that process. And I think that's really, really important as well. Because again, it took me 6 weeks just to go, oh my God, what am I going to do with myself? Right. Because, and it's scary and you get shaky and it's sad and it's hurtful. Again, I bring that word up a lot because I was so loyal, because I was so part of helping people in that show.
Yeah.
But you get through it. Don't get me wrong.
And I want to get into now how you really work with people and dealing with trauma and getting people through situations and your life coaching business. But I just wanted to ask you really quickly if you could talk about it, not about the circumstance, but are you okay with the storyline they gave you? I mean, were you happy in your last day of filming? Did you feel like it did your character of all these years justice in where it ended up?
I think so. I think it wasn't written, you know, it was written quickly. Mm. So in that regard, I think they did a lot of disservice to the two characters that people have wanted together for a really long time. And I think it did a disservice to the one that she was with at the time also. But that's the investment. That's a choice by the writer.
Mm-hmm.
And if the writer chooses not to write the head writer, if he chooses not to write that, you're just not going to get that storyline. So to a degree, it was fine.
Yeah,
it was fine. So the fans can look forward to that.
Right. Okay. All right. You and Sean have your own life coaching business. How, yes. When did that come about? How did it come about?
So Sean and I started during the pandemic in 2020. And we first started with actually a couple of wonderful people said, Ari, you should do a podcast. I'm like, what do I have to talk about? But then I realized ever since I was a kid, I've given back. I've done tons of charity work. I did a lot of work for Habitat for Humanity. I was an ambassador for the We Build down for the Women's Build in Los Angeles. So I wanted to do something good. And I started my own nonprofit, which I will say Ken Corday generously donated to for quite a few years when it was first getting off its feet. And so we decided that we wanted to give back. And so we started this daytime cares community to shine a light on service members the frontline service members. And then I thought, God, this feels really good. So, So what I want to do something more, I want to do something for the fans. So they can still connect with us because we didn't know where all of it was going.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we decided to start Aloha Sunset Sessions. And then it turned into Aloha Life Coaching.
Mm.
So that's how we started.
And for the most part, you're really getting in touch with people they're getting in touch with you, but people who are dealing with trauma or getting through something. It's not just like life coaching for people who need to figure out what job they're going to have, right? I mean, you're really getting into some deeper stuff, I feel like.
Yes, I'm specifically getting into deeper things. And Sean is, so really, I mean, we coach in very similar ways to keep, you know, our brand consistent. But what we're really realizing is that even if you are transitioning into a new job, it is all your thought process. Mm. The same with trauma. Because, you know, so many women can relate to what I'm going through, or I've been in the bad abusive relationship, or dealing with a Russian Spanish mother and anger issues and things like that, you know, and have actually gone through the transition and all the therapy that goes with it. I have such a huge relationship and ability to talk people through that and really get them excited about their life. Because when you sit in trauma, and really you have to be ready to mm-hmm. get out of trauma. Because if you're in it, that's for the therapist. The licensed therapist needs to help you with that. Because if there are medications involved and things like that, I can't offer that.
Right.
I can direct you to some good therapists, but you have to be in a place to go, I am so done. I am ready. Here we go.
Yeah.
And you still get in your own way, which is amazing. Yeah. But yeah, so the therapy, really, when you start becoming an act of service, it really helps pull you out of your own hole. Because mm-hmm. what happens is there's always, always going to be someone whose story is worse off than yours.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an animal who's suffering, who's got grunge all over it and things like that, to going, oh my God, this animal's about to die. Suddenly you're not thinking about your trauma anymore.
Mm.
You're thinking about how can I save? How can I help? What can I do?
Yeah. Well, I think that's really good advice. I was going to ask you for a piece of advice, but I think that so many people get stuck in what happened and they can't get over it. And also it affects their self-esteem. They just think of themselves stuck in that moment. And like you're talking about people that are looking to get jobs or have new relationships or start over, whatever it is for them. Sometimes their vision of themselves is so stuck in that moment that they can't let go. So I think that's a good piece of advice to stop looking at yourself and what happened and look at other people and try and help in another way because it gets yourself out of that and you can compartmentalize things differently. Is there any other piece of advice that really sticks out to you that for people that are really having a hard time in whatever trauma it is? And again, I feel like trauma is a very universal thing. And some people are like, oh, you know, mine's bigger or mine's not as big, so I won't even deal with it.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, when we allow our, I call it the risk management team up there, you know, the risk management team throws its alarms on and it tells you not to do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. It's better to live in the fear that you know than step outside the box to a proactive, positive life. Yeah. So when we consistently relay that trauma that happened in our head consistently, you are reenacting it consistently in your life. Mm. So you're living backwards. You're replaying the role. Yeah. You've created this movie in your head. And instead of, and this is easier said than done, and this is the work that I work on with my clients, but if you rename that movie, and if you stop, it's like a stop and swap. If you go, oh, here comes that thought again. For instance, I was in an abusive relationship. So if I continue to think about, you know, getting hit and pushed down the stairs, and the next guy's going to do that, I am going to constantly relive that moment. But mm-hmm. if I stop, go, wait, not everybody's like that. And I've got to stop and I've got to shift my thought into something different, which is, wow, this man has beautiful features. He's got this, he's got that. You know, and again, I'm just simplifying something right now. This is, there's a lot of work that goes behind that, but it is a stop and swap. So if anybody listening now today can just stop your thought process of how you're hurting yourself with that thought to what's something positive I can say.
Mm, I love that.
Where can I put myself? Yeah. So that I stop that thought immediately.
Mm. Talk about your advocacy with animals. I know that if people are looking at your Instagram at all, they see that you have a love for wild horses and obviously your dogs behind you. But
my dogs, I got guinea pigs, rabbits, rescue horse. So I live in the border of Nevada and California, mm-hmm. and we have a lot of natural wild horses on the West Coast. And so what's happening is they live on the lands of the Bureau of Land Management. They're public lands. They're our lands. It's what we all pay our states and we pay taxes for. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to shorten their name so everybody understands. It's the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM. Okay. But that's what they are called. And they are supposed to protect the lands, which means the elk, the deer, the coyotes, the burros, and the wild horses. So it isn't just the wild horses. The wild horses are growing in masses. There is a large percentage of wild horses but because we're developing so much, the horses are kind of, it's a little bit like deer. So you have to get a license to, you know, kill a deer to help with the population. Mm. So with the horses, there is a similar thing. I'm trying to play both sides here, right? Mm. What the BLM says, and then what the wild horse advocates are saying. So I live more on the side of the, you know, of the wild horse, which is how can we stop so much breeding? Mm. And they have a way to help with sterilizing the mares. So it's a little hard because you have to have great, you know, shooters, if you call them, I don't want to say that word, but yeah. You know, you have to have a good eye and you have to be able to have good aim and be able to get these horses sterilized so that they're not breeding so many babies, so mm-hmm. that we can stop the thousands of horses that are going in to the roundups a year.
But how do they do that? They would tranquilize them and then do something with them?
They tranquilize them, and then that sterilization goes into the mare and it helps them. So when they do breed, you know, they're not, it's like the pill.
They're shooting blank.
They don't have to take it once a month. Yeah. And so I personally have gone to one of the holding facilities, the Palomino Wild Horse and Burro Holding Facility. And I mean, it's awful the way they round these horses up. I think in Nevada, they made a ruling. They're not allowed to do helicopter roundups anymore, but they're rounding up these horses in Wyoming with the helicopters and they're killing some of these horses. And it's just really awful. You don't need to do it that way. But a lot of it has to do with the cattle ranchers, because the cattle ranchers want this land for the cattle to roam on,
yeah,
so they can feed, you know, us. And, you know, it's just this vicious circle. And so instead of really having really great communication on how we can do this, you know, the cattle ranchers have their government contracts, and the cattle ranchers are the ones that are holding the facilities. So you can imagine how much money the cattle ranchers are making.
Right.
And then they have incentives for the horses they do round up at auction. So you can only get four horses a year. The BLM can come to you and make sure that you're treating your animals great. And then after a year, you get your certificate, and then they can do whatever they want to the horses, which half of them end up in a kill pen.
Oh, wow.
Because another organization whom I love called All Seated in a Barn, Talia and her sister, they go to Texas and they try to buy as many horses as they can to save them from going to Mexico and Canada, where they eat meat, horse meat.
Oh my God. I didn't even know any of this was happening. That's crazy. Are wild horses terrible with people? Do they not trust them? Are they considered mean? Like, what's their personality?
Well, I mean, they're wild. So of course they're not going to be docile, but they can be. I forgot the actual name of it. My apologies, but there's a holding facility in Nevada for convicts where they can go and rehabilitate a lot of these Mustangs into rideable horses. And so that's interesting. Wow. Those go to auction. And I think a lot of this is pretty cool. I think I get what everybody's trying to do. I'm not trying to say one's worse than the other. I do think the roundups are awful though.
Yeah.
So like, when you go to the facility and you actually see how many horses there are, half of those horses are going to be in the kill pens. And so you just think it's so sad. And a lot of the horses, there's a new one in Winnemucca, which I just read about. Some of the horses, I think, like, I don't want to say a number because I don't want to be wrong on the number, but within 24 hours died. A lot to think they were poisoned and whatnot. They have to go do some investigating on it.
Right.
There was just something where some builders own a huge amount of property. They're doing construction on new homes, and there's a natural creek, and they put their fence on the other side of the natural creek, which technically is probably their property, and people went nuts. In Nevada, you're like, you're literally going to kill the horses because they have no water source because they put up this fence. And so now you're going to have a bunch of dead horses, or you're not going to open. And they're like, well, we left a gate open. Oh, I didn't know. I'm sorry. I didn't know the horses knew where the gate was.
Right.
So good news, as of yesterday or the day before, the state is spending, I think, $60,000 to move the fence line on the other side.
Yeah.
But couldn't you have done that in the first place?
Right.
Construction guys, you know?
I mean, it's just crazy. The people that don't care about animals, I just don't understand people like that to begin with. But yeah. I mean, from what you're saying, it sounds like the horses seem to be a nuisance for these farmers and you know, cattle ranchers that just want the land for things to make money. I mean, I get their vision behind it, but it just seems like these horses are, you know, going to be endangered at some point. The wild ones.
Yeah, if they're not careful. I mean, I went out to an area just outside of Sparks, Nevada, and there were 15 wild horses. And that same day I drove to the Palomino holding facility, and there were hundreds of horses. And I'm like, you left 15 here? There is so much area for them to be in, and you're just letting them. It's just, you know, and I do understand there is a lot of them. There's a lot of horses. I get it. But there's also a lot of land.
Right.
So.
Okay. So before we're done, I would be remiss if I didn't get into this. So you jumped into the public consciousness in a big way in 2016. I think the actual episode of Access Hollywood aired in 2005. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But during the Trump presidential campaign, can you take me back to when that tape started making news? And for people that don't know what I'm talking about, do you want to explain like what you were doing there and what actually happened?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So I got the opportunity in 2005 to be part of a promotion for Apprentice to Access Hollywood and Days of Our Lives. And I was asked to, maybe I was chosen, to be, to host Donald Trump and Billy Bush when they, as a tour, basically of Days of Our Lives. And then Trump was on the show, and I got to work with him as his part of his apprentice position at I guess I'm trying to remember the actual storyline. I can never remember half the time what he was actually doing there. But
but it was a cameo, right? He played himself.
Total cameo for him. Yeah. Now I'll tell you, it was a great experience. I said it back then and I'll say it now. I had a great experience. He was lovely. And I had no idea anything behind the scenes was happening. So that never affected me.
Was he a good actor? Did you have to explain to him how to read the line?
Oh, I didn't explain anything to him. I just let him do it. And I just did my thing because my character at the time is a gold digger and it was great. So it was a lot of fun to just play and listen, and he was great. I had a great time. And so I felt privileged that I was like, oh, this is a good opportunity for me. Mm-hmm. Right. We all want a great opportunity to be able to, step up in our career and do a good job at it. And I just wanted to do a great job hosting both of them and just that's all I felt it was. And it turned out to be great. I got a chance to meet Melania at the NBC party we had. And to me, lovely experience. So next step to October 2016, I get a call from my manager at the time who goes, did you do something with Trump? I'm like, what? Did you, and I'm trying to remember what I'm trying to even think about what she was talking about. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, in 2005, blah, 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 did this cameo. So she says to me, well, I'm going to send you a transcript. I want you to read it. And the Washington Post wants to know if you have an opinion. So I'm like, okay. So I don't even read it for a while. I don't even think of anything of it. And then I read it. And I just was with Sean, my fiance. And I thought, what is this? Like, what is it? I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm reading here, right. And listen to me, when we talked earlier about there's a thick skin you grow again, it doesn't make it okay mm-hmm. half the time, but you grow a thick skin. Everybody has spoken poorly about somebody in their lifetime. I don't care who you are. Mm-hmm. Everybody has. It's just people get caught on camera doing it. That's, unfortunately that happens all the time. Right. And if you've ever gone to a fraternity party, the things happen. So I'm reading it going, this sounds like something my fraternity guys I know would say, right? But I just didn't see it in the way that people were seeing it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't make a comment though, because guess why? And I did was in fear of losing my job. Mm-hmm. So I didn't say anything. And that whole, eventually I had to say something.
So you kind of went along with it and thought it was sort of funny?
I didn't go along with it. I didn't go along with it. What Sean and I did was we're like, well, let's, Sean's so wonderful. He's such a wonderful human. He's a wonderful man. And he's a wonderful supporter of me and of just people in general. And it's a crazy positive person anyway. So let's just wait and see what happens when this come out. It's either not going to be a big deal or it's going to be a big deal. Well, we all
and
know.
Wait, and were you personally offended or were you kind of like, okay.
I wasn't personally offended. It didn't have anything to do with me. I mean, right. So he made a comment, I guess, about my legs. And so did Billy Bush. But everything he was talking about wasn't about me. Hence why I kept saying this isn't about me.
Right. Well, I mean, didn't he say he was throwing in some Tic Tacs in case he kissed you?
Oh, so he kissed me.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. But if you look at my co-star at the time, too, as well as John Aniston, I could be offended or not, So I just wasn't offended at the time because it wasn't, how would I know that he was saying that?
Right.
And after the fact, it's like, it still didn't affect me. If a person says you have beautiful legs and you want to kiss me, as to versus what was, this is a totally different story of what's happening now because it's in a different context. Right. But, and people can argue that or not, mm-hmm. but because it wasn't happening at me, I didn't know it was happening.
Right.
So,
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But mm-hmm. when I know it's happening and it's happening at me and on me and everything else, that's a totally different story.
Right.
But so when this came out, the only thing I can think of is, oh my God, I don't know how to handle this.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking about the words he said. I wasn't thinking about he offended me. I wasn't thinking about that. I thought, oh my God, this now, once it came out, we sat down, we had lunch, we watched the news come out, and it was, my phone started ringing.
Yeah.
So that was more important to me. I felt attacked by the media because I knew all they wanted. I mean, the biggest thing was to get Trump off the ballot. Mm-hmm. That is not going to be my job. I was like, that is not my job. I am not, because nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And I don't lie, and I'm not good at lying, nor was I going to say anything that was going to hurt me in any way.
Right.
So nothing happened to me. Nothing happened. So there was nothing for me to say. And that was what I had to go with, because out of fear of, I don't know what's going to happen. And I don't know who's going to protect me. Who's going to protect me? Well, really nobody did.
Yeah.
I got no apology from my place of employment. I really got no apology from NBC. And so, you know, an executive at the time did, because he had to. But I just feel like I had no protection. And so I had to, and my fiance and I had to protect our family. And that's mm-hmm. how we felt. And so if anything happened, that was totally just uncalled for, the way I felt I was attacked by the media. So, I can imagine you understand what that mm-hmm. feels like. And so, we decided to just, look, as a woman, I am not going to let this affect my family. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to let people attack my family. So the only news I was going to do was the one I had to do, which was NBC. And they said, oh, we're going to talk about your nonprofit, and we really want to shine a light on you. They didn't talk about my nonprofit. They sugarcoated everything and they kept it really tight. You can see it on, you know, it's not even 3 minutes. Mm. And so they didn't do what they said. And then, and I'm not on NBC anymore, so I can say that. and then I thought the one journalist at the time that I felt had a very nice ease to him was Anderson Cooper. And I went on Anderson Cooper for my fans, for my family, to say, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I'm okay. He's going to have to deal with the things he has to deal with, meaning, you know, Donald Trump, but it didn't affect me personally. And so that's how I went about it. Nobody bothered me after that, because there's nothing to give them.
Right.
And that was that.
And here we are now, where it's being brought up again in a trial. Have you been following the trial?
Yeah, I have. I've been very interested in, you know, just because they, you know, when they bring it up, you're like, oh, well, I wonder what's going to happen. I mean, my brother is great. My brother and I have a great, great relationship, and he is a history buff. So this is just, you know, up his alley as far as it's a big deal, right? The Access Hollywood thing was a big deal.
It is and will always be a part of history. It's kind of where it started to snowball, and then Stormy Daniels came on the scene after this, and now Michael Cohen is in the biggest trial of the century, sort of speaking that this could have been a catastrophic thing that could have cost Donald Trump the election.
And I wouldn't be surprised if something was real and true that happened to me, or for me, however you want to look at it, that it would have made a big difference, but it didn't. Mm-hmm. So sorry, everybody.
Right. I think people will want to know what your thoughts are now about Donald Trump. Has the situation, how your life has changed because of it, the fact that you were thrust into the spotlight, people who may not have known you that don't watch daytime TV now all knew your name. Do you have a different feeling on Donald Trump now?
I don't. I didn't then. And I don't now. I think I'm very much, well, you know, as far as if we're going to, I don't really like talking politics, but yeah. It, you know, as far as the way he speaks, could he do a better job of it? Absolutely. I think there are policies that were great that he did. I'm sure our pockets felt a little bit better 4 years ago than they do now. I know mine did. Mm-hmm. So I think there are things, without getting too much into that I felt were really great.
Yeah.
I am not going to judge the system. I think people can probably hear the way I think by the things that I'm saying. But I am very in the middle of what's going on in this country. And I mean, if this is the conversation we want to have, I just feel like there is weaponization on both sides. So now I'm looking at it from a different point of view, going, Donald Trump could be anybody right now. And that's what's scary. Right. So I think there is an attack personally. But when it comes to the actual Access Hollywood situation, I feel the same way I did then, the way I feel now, because that, to me, I didn't want that to change my life.
Yeah.
So, you know, to make it personal, not about him per se, because I don't want to make it about him. I want to make it about how my life was or was not affected. And if it did anything for me, again, I always like finding the positives in a situation, is it taught me how to say, wait, now that this went on and this situation happened, what can I do to better my life? And how can I better the people around me? And what kind of footprint can I leave on this earth? And I did when I started my nonprofit years ago, Arrowheart Adventure Camps, when we were testing out the program, we went to South Africa and worked on the program for 18 to 24 year olds. And that was my statement then. How can I leave a better footprint?
Mm-hmm.
That'll be my statement now. There's a lot that happens in the world, and there's a lot of unfortunate things that can happen. And I always say happen for people. I mean, look at the good you're doing right now. Look at the good that came out of this for you. Mm-hmm. Right. And we go, let's do better. Let's do better than the situation.
Yeah.
And let's teach people how to strive, how to communicate, how to create a life that's just great for them, mm-hmm. out of the trauma. Right. So we circle back around to that. Right. So I just want to leave that positive message to go, yeah, this situation happened. This happened. But you know what? I have got a better daughter for it. I'm a better mother because of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm a better person in my relationship with my fiance and my ex-husband and my immediate family.
Yeah.
Those are the things that I want to leave this conversation with, to make sure that this isn't about those other people.
Yeah. No, of course not.
You know,
and you had said you did not get an apology at the time. To this day, have you ever heard from Billy Bush or Trump?
No, actually, my team reached out to Billy Bush to do a podcast to say, hey, kind of be cool just to go.
That would be.
Deserves a second chance. Like, I'm happy for Billy. I'm happy he did what he did to get to the position he's in again. Everyone mm-hmm. deserves to. And you see him working really hard on himself. And I wanted to build that bridge between us, and he didn't want to do it.
Wow. He declined.
Yeah. I was like, okay. To each other. I mean, I get it. You know, it's all right.
Maybe that's just too close to home for him. You know what I mean?
It might be. I really wanted to find something, you know, more like talk about it, and then just like, what can we do to benefit? Because, you know, like I said, he worked on himself to better himself for his kids.
Yeah.
I thought that was brilliant.
But he never came out and talked about it really and took that much responsibility before, unless he like had to. And I love Billy. I know Billy. But the thing is that it almost seems like I'm making this up just purely by thought. I just feel like he would be nervous that if he was to do that and acknowledge things with you and have that conversation, he's probably in fear that he could lose his job now, or, you know, he's already gone down a path and he's like, I don't want to talk about it anymore, because he's not ready to not make a joke of it, but put it behind him and really like apologize, but like in a way that would be meaningful, that could, you know, I just think that he would be nervous that he could get in trouble again. I don't know.
Yeah, probably. And look, I'm not expecting an apology. It would almost be like I get it. Like,
yeah,
apologies, if they don't have any true meaning behind it, they're worthless.
Right.
So that's kind of, you know, I don't necessarily need that. An acknowledgement is nice. An acknowledgement of, it is there. It's kind of, you know, like my current situation, an acknowledgement of, you know, well, you have been loyal. You have been amazing.
Right.
You know, and we do appreciate you.
But I think it's interesting that you are doing something so brave in what you're doing now, because you wanted to stand up for others, for yourself. And, you know, you knew that there could be some retaliation, but you felt it was important to speak. You know, I feel like Billy should be doing that, because it would be important to have that conversation. I feel like so many people would tune in to listen to that, just to see what came out of that conversation.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, when you're coming from a great place, or, you know, if you
and
were
so
to
much
hear,
time has elapsed, you know what I mean? It's like you can look back in a more educational way on it.
Yeah, and I think it would serve him well to be able to just, it's done. Like I can, that's a part I can actually heal for myself.
Right.
And that's how I saw it. And that's how I thought about it. But listen, you know, people have to recover the way they need to recover. And I understand. And I will always be, like I said, I will always be an advocate for those who are trying to do better in their lives. And that is the most important thing. I'm trying to do better in my life. Is there a way that I could have done something differently in the situation that we're in now, the lawsuit that I'm in now? You know, I look back and I go, no, because I did it in such steps. I did it slowly. Mm-hmm. I did it in a well thought out manner. You know, unfortunately, you know, when people get too much power, there's sometimes things happen. You know, even that person, I would be like, you know, there were a lot of great things about Albert that were okay, you know, but then there were things that weren't.
Right.
So, you know, and it's, I just think when people acknowledge, I have always, you know, I've always told my daughter this, I've told prior boyfriends this, you know, or it's just, if you walked up to me and were just honest about your feelings, about what you need, or I don't want this anymore, or whatever the situation is, if you were honest about it, I would have so much more respect for you than if you just don't do it. And you could have a better, you could work things out a lot easier. And I think those are really important to remember, as, you know, as because we lack communication now because of social media and all the things. Mm-hmm. We can hide up behind the computer, but when you're having an honest conversation and a real conversation with someone and not a defensive conversation,
right,
then you can accomplish so much more in your life.
I totally agree with that. And it's fallen by the wayside so much recently. And communication is absolutely the thing. And being transparent and not, you know, putting on airs. It's like you hardly see that anymore. But when you do, it's so refreshing and you can get so much further.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Tell people where they could see more from you, hear more from you, and learn about your all the things you're working on.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much. So a couple things. You can go to arianzucker.com, and I have my podcast on there as well. So it's just kind of easy to get to. And
how often is your podcast coming out?
Once a week.
Okay.
Once a week right now. Yes. And so that's called Everything from A to Z. You can hear it on Spotify, and I'm in my third season, so there's quite a few of them to listen to, and Apple. And I have my coaching company is AlohaLifeCoaching.com. We have our little brand that we've come out with called Taloha. And it's really just the brand itself, the lifestyle brand, is really about enriching the world within you so you can elevate the world around you.
Ooh, I love that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. That's Sean. Sean came up with that. Sean's the news director at Outside TV and host. And so he uses that as his opening and tag all the time. Taloha, everybody. So use it. It's a good feeling. You know, that's our whole goal. Also, you know, my beautiful and wonderful friend and lawyer, Anahita Sedigathfar, we are both working on creating basically speaking events that are helping people to women, of course, but people create a fair, safe, and balanced environment in their community, family, place, and workplace. So we're going to be doing a little bit of a media tour as well, just letting people know that we're available, and if they're in a situation that they can, you know, reach out to us. And right now you can reach out to me at Aloha Life. We have our email on there, info@AlohaLifeCoaching.com. If you're ever in a situation like this, she's incredible. I'm incredible.
You are.
And yeah, so we're going to do more because of, you know, this, I think this situation happened for me, to take the positives out of the incredible job I had for 26 years. And now moving towards this advocacy and being a person of service, I think incredible things are happening, and we want to help those who fear, helping themselves. So here we are.
Right. I love that. I appreciate that. I just have to ask for your fans on days. Do you think that they can expect to see you anywhere on TV in the future? Do you want to continue in some respects doing acting?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is. It's the world is a little tough right now. They're still building back from what was just recently?
The writer's strike.
Yeah, writer's strike. That thing. Yeah, it's even hurting my brain. So the writers had to stop writing. I mean, I have a lot of close writer friends, a couple that live up here where production is a little slow. But once, I think next year will be a better year for everybody. So they're limited on that. But yes, absolutely. And hosting as well, possibly anchoring. We'll see where things go. So looking forward to doing anything new. So, but a lot of it, like you, Rachel, is just, you know, getting the word out there, really working on the podcast and the advocacy and creating a beautiful story for the world to see.
Amazing. You are so interesting. I wish you nothing but the best. I can't wait to see how this all turns out for you. And I'm sure all your fans have loved getting to learn more about you today. So again, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me. You're so wonderful and you have such a kind heart. So I'm happy to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.
This episode sponsored by The BombBox. When someone you love is going through cancer, you want to do more than send flowers. You want to truly help. That's why there's The BombBox. Founded by 6-time cancer survivor Liz Bendit, The BombBox creates thoughtfully curated care packages filled with premium, practical tools designed specifically for surgery, chemo, and recovery. Every item is chosen based on insights from more than 500 patients and caregivers, because during treatment, the smallest comforts can make the biggest difference. Don't just send a gift, send real support. Visit thebombbox.com today and get free shipping on orders over $50. That's thebalmbox.com.